Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I see people are still piling in. I'll give you guys a moment. Just take a sip of water here. Hold on. Okay. Well, hello, everybody. This is Joanna Lindenbaum, and I am so very excited to be here with all of you. There are some people here that I know very well. To those of you, I'm so happy you're here. I'm happy to see your names pop up on my screen right now. And there are quite a number of people that I don't yet know. And if that's you, I want to just extend a warm, warm welcome to you. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so excited to get to know you. We are going to spend the next 3 hours doing a really deep dive into breakthrough questioning, all in what I like to call sacred depth style. This isn't just regular questioning skills. This isn't just regular breakthrough questioning skills. We're going to go deep. This is sacred depth coaching style. So I want to just tell you a little bit about what to expect over the next 3 hours, what we're going to be doing. I always find I like to know at the beginning of something like, how is this going to work? So I'm going to tell you. First of all, I'm going to be sharing a lot of training and a lot of content with you. We're going to be looking at a lot of principles that are going to help you become much, much better at asking breakthrough questions. It's not going to be the full enchilada on breakthrough questioning today. That takes a bit longer. The way that I teach it in the full sacred depths training, it does take a bit longer. So we're going to look at a portion of breakthrough questioning today, but you're going to get a lot, like way more than you would expect. It's a lot of good stuff. As I train you and share principles with you and share the tools and techniques for you to be able to ask breakthrough questioning, we're going to be also doing some inner work. And I'll be talking about that in a little bit. I can't teach or train on any kinds of coaching skills without also leading you through some inner work. It is key to becoming a better and better coach and a better crafter and deliverer of powerhouse questions. So you're going to hopefully get a lot of really not just great tools and techniques, but a lot of important personal insights for yourself today. We're also going to have a lot of time for Q&A. I love Q&A. I love hearing what's coming up for you. I'll be pausing throughout our time today to ask for reflections, to see what's coming up, to ask for questions, and we'll also devote some time at the end of the workshop for wrap-up questions and all of that. So please participate. Like I said, I love questions. Everybody learns from questions and reflections and all of that. And the other piece that we'll be dipping into lightly today is to also be doing some practice. If you're here live, I want to give you the opportunity in this container to practice the skills that you're going to be learning, and also to receive feedback on it from me. I am a very big believer in part of what creates coaching mastery is practice. The practice really helps you integrate and build confidence. So we're going to be doing all of that during our time today. Now, for those of you that know me, you know what I'm all about, but I want to just take a moment and share a little bit about who I am and what my mission is and the deeper reasons why we're here today, why I'm here today, I should say. So so I've been coaching for two decades now, and during that time period, I've had the honor and the privilege of serving thousands of individuals, either in one-on-one work or in group work. I've kind of been here in the industry since before coaching was even an industry, really, or at least the industry that it is today. I was one of the first practitioners, if you can believe it, even before social media was a thing, back in the day when we couldn't even use social media. And I love it. I love coaching. I love the transformational industry. I'm such a big believer in it. However, and this is a big however, I've seen a lot over the last two decades, and I really believe that as an industry and as a community, we're doing great, but we need to do better. We must do better. We need to focus not only on marketing, which has been kind of the big focus in the coaching and transformational industries over the last years. That's important, but we need to focus just as much, if not more, on quality and on mastery. In some ways, the industry has lost those values. And I really believe that we need to bring it back to quality and mastery, and that we have to elevate the industry. And there's so much that I can say on this, and I won't get too much on my soapbox right now, I promise. But I do want to share with you how I came to train coaches and facilitators. So for many years, I was a business, just a plain old business coach. Well, never plain old, right? But I was focusing on teaching marketing techniques as well as doing a lot of inner transformational work with my clients so that they could execute the marketing, so that they could be visible, so that they could charge their worth, so they could stand up as leaders, you know, all of that. And what I noticed is that my clients were really successful, quite successful, especially the ones that had been learning with me for a while. And as I started to think about it and started to really look at what was making my clients so successful, what I really came to see was, yes, in some ways it was the marketing that I was teaching them. For sure, that had a piece of it. And for sure, it was the inner work, without a doubt. But what I really came to see as I looked deeper into it is the reason why my clients were able to have success that a lot of their other peers and colleagues were not is because I was teaching them in between the lines how to be better practitioners, how to co-create deeper and longer-lasting transformation with their clients, how to deliver the highest quality of work, how to hold tighter containers, how to ask better questions. And it was because of how my clients were showing up for their clients that they were re-signing clients over and over again, that they were receiving tons of referrals, that their reputations were growing, and quite frankly, it was because of the quality of their work that they were able to so boldly and effectively market themselves, because they knew that they were in full integrity in their marketing promises. And of course, you know, as I saw that, all of a sudden, I realized that was one of the reasons why my business had been so successful as well. Yes, it's about the marketing for sure, But even more than that, or what makes the marketing so successful, is the combination of the inner work and the quality that you deliver to your clients, the ways that you're able to help them transform, and then how they feel about you because of that. And so that's what really prompted me to kind of get on the soapbox around the importance of the quality of your coaching skills, your coaching presence. It was because of that and because I had seen how other people in the industry had been so burned because they had focused so much on the glossy marketing and not enough on the skills. As an aside, what I have come to learn even since then is that the more that you master your coaching skills, the better your marketing becomes, also because you're using all of your coaching skills to market better. You need to have exquisite listening skills in order to have a really effective sales conversation, in order to know what kind of copy to write, for example. You'll see as we move through today, the better you are at breakthrough questioning, the better you'll be at enrollment conversations, the better you'll be able to write your copy, to show up for preview presentations, all of that. So all of this is why I started training practitioners. All of this is why I created the Sacred Depths Coaching Certification, because I see that it is really, that in order to help people grow their businesses in the best way, it has to start with integrity, it has to start with quality. So, all of that is why we're here. And we're here because that exceptional kind of coaching, that sacred depths kind of coaching, means being able to go deep, to create real long-lasting transformation, to ask the hard but penetrating questions. It means being able to hold the most loving space for clients, to not be afraid of shadows, but to know how to leverage them, to know exactly what to do when your client brings big emotions to the table. Sacred Depths coaching means to not get stuck yourself when your client encounters their own fears, but to know exactly how to help your clients befriend their fears and rewire their negative thought patterns that hold them back. It means transcending the regular coaching conversations of simply, you know, what's your goal and how do you get there, transcending all of that. And it means also bringing the highest level of quality to what you offer. And at the heart of all of that, and at the heart of really effective coaching, is breakthrough questioning. You cannot have sacred depth coaching, you cannot have masterful coaching without masterful questioning. The most masterful coaching questions have the ability to do the following. They can help create massive awareness for your client. They can help your client access her own intuition, her own inner knowing, her own inner wisdom. The most masterful questions promote creativity, brainstorming, problem solving. The most masterful questions empower clients to take responsibility for themselves. That's an important one, right? Because it isn't just about giving them good information, and we're going to be talking about that in a little bit. Coaching isn't just about giving good information. It's about empowering our clients to take responsibility for themselves on the information. The most masterful coaching questions have the ability to create integrity and commitment. They have the ability to help our clients articulate their judgment. They have the ability to create new habits. The most masterful coaching questions activate the highest level of learning possible. And as I said before, they're also essential to successful sales calls, copywriting, preview presentations, all of that. Now, there are three main components to, I always like to say, in Sacred Depths coaching, there's three main components to mastery. And I want to share what those three main components are with you, because they're also the three main components of breakthrough questions. This is a very kind of at a high view, high level perspective, but I think it's helpful to break this down as a starting point. So the first main component of mastery as a Sacred Depths coach, but also in breakthrough questioning, is the mastery of the basic and advanced skill. So in the Sacred Depths philosophy of coaching, when I say mastery of basic and advanced coaching skills, obviously this includes the techniques themselves, right? The questioning techniques, the listening techniques, the creating awareness techniques, the strategizing techniques, the visioning techniques. I teach a befriend your fear technique, rewire your negative thought patterns, right? These are the actual skills and techniques. Obviously, we need those, all of the ritual techniques, the visualization techniques. We need to know the nuts and bolts of the skills. So that's the first main component that you need for mastery, the nuts and bolts of the skills. But there's still two other components that are really important. The next component, I like to call it mastery of human behavior. So the truth is that masterful coaching skills and techniques are vital, but they're actually not enough if you're really committed to co-creating results with your clients, to co-creating healing, to co-creating transformation. In order to bring your coaching skills alive, you need to understand your clients. You need to understand them deeply and intimately. And that's why the mastery of human behavior is not only essential, it's a game changer for anyone who's a coach. So that mastery of human behavior piece is about learning about human tendencies, human responses, human the belief systems that people have, spiritual wisdom, understanding all the different ways people might respond to things, behave beforehand. That's what is going to help make your skills come alive. It's not just the skills, but it's the understanding of the human behavior to understand how to ask the question or what is the right language for the question, all of that. And that's one of the big components, not just in the full Sacred Depths training. We look a lot at human behavior and responses, but you'll see that we're going to touch on that today too. So we're going to look at questioning skills, but in order for me to teach you the skills, we're also going to look at different behavior tendencies that your clients will show up with. It's vital. And then that third component, I already mentioned a little bit earlier, but I like to call it personal mastery. So to be an exceptional coach that your clients trust and truly learn with and from, you have to do your own inner work, period. You have to work through your own fears, look at your own belief systems, challenge your own habits and patterns. It's the only way to be in integrity as a practitioner, and it's also the only way to show up with confidence in the coaching container. So we really go deep with that, in Sacred Depths. And again, you'll see today when we look at breakthrough questioning that we're going to hit on this component a little bit too. We're going to be doing some of that inner work. So that's what we're going to be doing today. You're going to be receiving a lot, not only by way of tools, but by way of confidence and of inspiration and motivation. And I'll just mention this briefly now. For some of you, by the time we're done, you're going to want more. You're going to feel like it was just the beginning. This always happens. You're going to recognize that you're deeply longing to be a Sacred Depths coach. And if that's the case for you, I'll spend a little bit of time towards the end of the workshop sharing more about how you could step into that for yourself if you feel called. Now, here's the other important thing that I want to say as we begin to really look at foundational principles. This is really important. Some of what I'm going to be sharing with you today, some of what I'm going to be teaching you today, is at first going to seem obvious. You're going to do a big duh, like, oh, I knew that. But here's what's important about this. It may seem obvious, but I can guarantee you that you're not fully applying it in your work. So especially if you're here today and you're a seasoned practitioner or a very seasoned practitioner, don't be jaded by experience. Don't hold yourself back from learning today because of what you already know. When you hear something that sounds obvious, don't tune out, but instead perk your ears up even more so that you can find the next layers of it for yourself. I promise you, you will, and you'll be happy that you did. So, last piece by way of intro that is really important. I want to give you an opportunity to just take a moment and to write down why you're here today. So speaking of obvious, I know in a way, right, it should be such an obvious question. But I want you to take a moment and really think about it. It's important because you're busy and your time is precious and you've devoted a chunk of time to this today because of something very, very important to you. So why are you here? Are you here because you recognize that your clients are getting stuck and you don't feel like you're asking good enough questions? Are you here because you're asking good questions, but you know you're ready to be exceptional? Are you here because you don't feel you're co-creating as powerful breakthroughs with your clients as you know that you can be? Are you here because you find your clients don't commit deeply enough to their goals? Are you here because you want to ask better questions in your enrollment conversations? Are you here because you sense your clients are only really getting to half of what their deep inner wisdom actually knows? Or maybe you're here because you've observed me, coach, and you want to know how I'm able to ask such penetrating questions. A lot of practitioners that come to this workshop and to Sacred Depths are already seasoned and very advanced, but some of you here today may also be new practitioners that are whip smart and you're fast learners. And if that's you, are you here because you're a new practitioner and you know that you want to be one of those practitioners of substance and depth and meaning? Or maybe you're here because you've been burnt in the past by a not-so-effective coach, and you want to make sure that you're of a different caliber. So get clear on why you're here, and let that really lead the way for you today. Now, in today's coaching industry, and this is an important piece, there are way too many practitioners that consult when what's actually required is coaching. Now, just to be clear, there's nothing wrong with consulting. And for a lot of us, myself included, consulting is an important part of the service that we provide. We have an expertise and wisdom and experience and knowledge, and our clients want our opinions on things. But that being said, a big mistake that practitioners make is that they default to consulting more than is actually helpful or supportive for the client. And in doing so, they miss out on opportunities to ask questions that will actually create way more positive energy, way more motivation, way more excitement, and way better ideas than if they were to simply share their expertise. In situations that require coaching, when we default to consulting, then our clients miss out on the opportunity to answer a question. And it may be the simplest question ever, but one that can create the biggest difference. Now, learning definitely happens when we consult, for sure. But there are many more moments in coaching where learning is more optimal when it comes through self-discovery, self-inquiry, self-proclamation, and answering questions for oneself. So this all seems kind of obvious, and yet there are so many coaches that default mainly into consulting. Why is that? Well, there are a couple of reasons why a coach may end up consulting when they should actually be asking questions. And here are some of those reasons. Check them out and see if any of these come up for you. Number one, sometimes the coach might feel a discomfort with the learning process or have a fear that the learning is going to take too long if they ask the questions instead of give the answer. Another reason why coaches sometimes end up consulting when they should be asking breakthrough questions is because somewhere deep inside of them, they have a need to sound smart or to impress their client. Another reason is because a lot of the times a coach, if they haven't done their own inner work, may end up taking over responsibility for their client. They may hero their client instead of hold space for their client. Other times, it's because the coach, and this is related, doesn't trust that their client knows best. And this is such an important guiding principle that we need for all of coaching and for breakthrough questioning. The client always knows, and the client always knows best. And I'll give you my own learning example with this. When I was more of a baby coach, I wasn't always trusting that my clients knew best. I remember I was working with a client, and, you know, traditionally we were working on business building. And traditionally when you first start a business, it's best to start with one-on-one clients and then move into groups. Generally, you don't want to start with groups and right away before you have a one-on-one clientele. I was working with this client, and she really wanted to start with groups first. And I consulted her to say, like, no, you got to start with the one-on-one. And that was actually not right for her. That was not right for her. Instead of me asking the questions to see what was right for her, and instead of trusting that, I was in consulting mode. And then for those of us that are seasoned, sometimes we consult more than coach simply because it's habit and we forget, right? So, you know, all of these reasons, these have a lot to do with coaching energetics and the coaching container. We'll go into all of that today, but I did want you to just think about this for yourself for a moment. So are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just giving clients the answers instead of providing them with the learning opportunity that questions can really provide. And if you're not already coaching, you can relate this to your personal relationships in conversations, or even conversations with yourself. Are you consulting yourself too much instead of asking yourself questions, right? And so if you notice that this happens for you sometimes, why? You know, I shared some reasons why it might be happening. So why? So in order to not rely on consulting when you should be asking questions, and in order to ask better questions, one of the first things you want to do is whatever came up for you in those questions that I asked you, you want to look deeper there. Like I said, we don't have time for that today, but you've got hopefully some little ideas there. But another piece here is to go back to your listening skills, and particularly to the listening skill of being curious. When you can get curious, you'll do less consulting and more coaching or more questioning. So when you're curious, so much is possible. So much more is available to open up for you, for your client. There's so much more creativity and creative solutions that are available. And it's simply a principle of human nature that people are curious, and that curiosity leads to learning, right? So this is so simple. Like I said, some of the things I'm going to be sharing are so obvious, but it's so important for both you as the coach and for your client for so many reasons, but one of them is because energy follows energy. For those of you that know me, you know that I say this a lot. Energy follows energy. So what does that mean in this context? The more that you as a coach or practitioner are able to show up in the energy of curiosity, then the more willing your client is going to be curious and go to the deeper levels themselves. Energy follows energy. When the coach is curious, the coach's curiosity allows the client to be curious and go to the deeper awarenesses instead of staying with what they already know, which isn't helping them so much. Now, curiosity is actually a skill that can be way more challenging than it seems at first. And here's why. We're all born with the skill of curiosity innately. We just have to look at any baby or young child. And we see, right, that they have curiosity innately. I see this so much in my 5-year-old daughter. She's just interested in everything. You know, we can take a walk outside, and she's curious about the flowers, and she's curious about the trees, and she's always asking about everything and wondering about everything. So we're born with it innately, but what happens for basically all of us is that we lose it along the way. We lose our curiosity along the way. We're born as the curious maiden, totally alive, open to all experiences. And then somehow that can get buried under history or under conditioning or under the ways that adults react or respond to us. In other words, we get jaded by our experiences and we lose some of our curiosity. So it's so important when we are coaching, I think in all of life really, but when we're coaching, to be conscious of this and to activate our curiosity. And you may think on the surface that you're being curious, but I want you to just ask yourself, you know, when you're working with your clients, are you really activating all of your curiosity? For example, if a client says to you, I don't know, maybe you're talking about a certain strategy about something or something they want to do, you know, if the client says that hasn't worked in the past, do you get curious about that? If a client says, I don't like to exercise, do you just take it and move on, or do you get curious about that? If a client says, I want to create a seven-figure business, do you get curious about that, or do you just accept it? Okay, they want to create this seven-figure business, let's get to work, right? And then a good thing to, you know, as we're looking at curiosity, a good thing to also think about is how often do you shove curiosity aside with yourself and with your own life? And I want you to just take a moment and reflect on this. How often do you block off curiosity and then along with it possibilities for yourself, because you're just taking things at face value or for granted in your life? And just be honest with yourself about that. What's an example of maybe something in your life right now where you could be more curious about it instead of being jaded about it or taking it for granted? Maybe it's a certain situation in your life or a certain desire or a certain block, but where's somewhere where maybe you've cut your curiosity off a little bit? When and how did your maiden lose some of her curiosity? When and how did your little maiden, your little girl inside of you, or your little one inside of you lose their curiosity? What happened along the way to give your little one the message to not be curious? Just take a moment. Good to just have a little awareness around that. I'll ask one more question about this. What did you learn from your parents about, or caregivers, around being curious? Or what did you not learn from them about being curious? And, you know, I just want to mention, if you're on this call and you're someone that is has the talent, the brilliance, the gift of being intuitive, and I'm going to guess that many of the people on this call do because I tend to attract very intuitive people. So if you're on the call and you tend to be an intuitive person, then chances are when you're working with your clients, you may know things about your clients before they even know it about themselves. And that's an amazing thing. It definitely gives you an edge in your work for sure. But if you're intuitive, you want to actually pay even more attention to this principle of being curious. Because if you know it already, if your intuition has told you already, you may have more of a tendency then to fall into that consulting mode and share flat out what your intuition is telling you instead of formulating the question that the client needs to answer for themselves in order to really receive the learning. Okay, so let's pause here just for a moment because I've been sharing a lot so far, and I'd love to hear from just a few of you, what is it that what's really hitting you so far? What are you seeing for yourself that feels important? What's coming through for you that feels important to you? What are you learning? Star two. Or what questions do you have so far? Star two. What are you guys seeing? Nobody wants to answer. I'd love to have one or two. Oh, great. Oh, there were people. I just didn't see them. Tammy.
Yeah, this is really great. And, you know, kind of as a leader, I'm currently a CEO, and I'm trying to get better at, you know, having more of the coaching aspect with my team and having that cascade out. But when you talked about the curiosity, I think as a leader, sometimes we're so, you know, we ask the question, I do this, and then I really want an answer. And then instead of spending that time in that space of really curiosity, sometimes I do it, but when I'm stressed or there's something happening, it doesn't always happen. And so I just wondered if you could give an example. So, you know, if you're a coach and you're working with an executive, or if you are an executive, you know, how do you help that person, the leader, really step into that space so that they can be more effective in the long run rather than just trying to get speed to market and answer the, you know, get the answer that maybe they've already decided they know what the answer is and they just want to hear it. So.
Yep. I got it. I love that question. So there's like a long answer to that question, which is beyond the scope of this, but there's also a shorter. I think we can get you a little farther here with this. So I want to go back to energy follows energy. And how the coach shows up can really dictate how the client shows up. And when the coach shows up with patience in the learning process, with trust of herself and of her client, when the coach shows up trusting that the answers will come, and like I said earlier, but that it is a learning process, then it really sets a stronger container for the client to follow. So when I hear a question like what you're asking, which is such a great question, the first place I go to is, where are you as the practitioner not as comfortable as you could be with slowing it down a little bit, trusting the learning process, and really trusting the coaching? What is it that you're scared of that's getting in the way? Are you there with me?
Oh, yes, sorry. I had to hit it back on mute. No, that is really perfect because I totally know when I show up in a room sometimes and I can feel that energy, it absolutely is true, and I'm definitely working on that. But I think that awareness is really critical, and thanks for that really nice explanation. That was really helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I'm going to press you just for a second here. If it's okay with you, if you're comfortable sharing, I'd love to hear from you. I think it'll be important for you and for others to hear. What is the fear for you? Because I hear you when you're not in that fear, you're able to set that container, and then the client is patient and open and willing and ready and wanting to be vulnerable. But in the moments where you're not, what's going on for you? What are you scared of? What's the fear?
I think the fear for me in that current role as CEO is that I'm responsible for, you know, everything that's going on in the organization. And so if I'm asking a question or I'm trying to be curious, I may be in such a state of anxiety about whatever is happening that I am really shutting down that opportunity for that, you know, for whether it's my chief medical officer, whoever I'm talking to really surface their own concerns and issues. And so I feel like I get a transactional answer rather than a transformational one.
Yeah, good, good. That's really important. So that's a place to really continue to work on. That feels really right and important. Good. Excellent. Anyone else want to share? One more person? Star 2, I feel like there were some other hands raised and then they got unraised. What are you seeing so far? What's important for you? Well, here we go. Christine R. from Canada.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So I'm finding this, as always, with your work, just really transformative and informative. What I'm really noticing is that I do default into consulting a lot. I am extremely intuitive and a channeler. And what's kind of surprised me is that at the beginning of a relationship with a client, I tend to do more coaching. But as I get to know them better and as I'm realizing, become more involved with them and in assisting them. So look, the longer the relationship goes on, I'm finding I'm doing more consulting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more into consulting the longer we're together.
I'm so glad you're bringing that up. That is common. I'm so glad you can see that. Good. Keep on going. I know you had more.
Yeah, and it's like in my own personal journey, right? I just kind of discovered that I do have codependent tendencies as a result of my trauma, and so now I'm starting to question: is like when I go into consulting, is that codependent tendency? Is that what's coming up, right? I'm wanting to make it.
Taking
and
over responsibility in some
exactly.
way.
Exactly. And
yes.
And I know because of what I'm channeling, I can do that immediately and now really understanding what I am, the gift that I am not allowing my client to have by doing that.
Yes. Good. I'm so glad you're seeing it. Just this awareness alone is going to start creating some shifts and how you're showing up with those longer-term clients. I'm so glad to hear it. Good. Wonderful. And I'll take one more. Who is this? Hold on. I think I just lost you. There we go. 2772 are your last numbers, but your name isn't coming up.
Yeah. Okay. Good morning, Joanne. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Who is this?
Oh, good. Yeah, this is Snow. I am in extreme Northern California. It's the first full-length training I'm doing with you, so thank you. I'm enjoying it. I was really struck by your last comment before working with this lady. When you talked about being careful about skipping the curious stage, going into consulting mode, especially if you're intuitive, and I hadn't given that consideration before, and so it kind of brought up for me a client I'm working with right now, who is wildly enthusiastic about finding healers to help her with her health situation right now. And so I feel like, yeah, she's not depending on herself enough. And so it just came to me, in listening and trying to piece it all together from your suggestions, that maybe I need to ask her something like, what is it about working with experts that's so alluring to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's probably a lot of different questions, you know, just based on the process with her, but I think that's one really important one. It's so great that you're becoming aware of this. And the question that you just modeled for us is one that will help lead her to more empowerment and to taking more responsibility for herself. A practitioner with less awareness than you on this could easily fall into heroing mode, which is never empowering for the client.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they want our consulting information. Like, we have certain wisdom that they want and need for sure, 100%, but we don't want to, if it is just that, then we're no longer empowering in the same way. So thank you for that forward,
yeah,
as you're having that awareness.
Is it possible for you to make another comment or so, how you would define heroing mode?
Mm-hmm. Heroing. So this goes back to something that we go into depth, in sacred depths. It's about the energetics of the container. But real quick, what I'll say is what can often happen is that there's an imbalance in the playing field between the coach and the client, where either the coach feels less than the client or feels that the client is less than them. And when there's that imbalance, we move into taking over responsibility instead of trusting ourselves as well as trusting our clients.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good. I'm so glad you guys brought that forward. So let's continue. There's still so much here for us to look at. So we've already started looking at elements of what makes powerful breakthrough questions, and I want to go deeper and look at some more. So this is very important. There's no formula for amazing questions. I wish there were. I wish I could just give you a formula. It is true in Sacred Depths when we do like the full training, I do give certain sequences and all of that, but the truth is there's really no formula. And that's because masterful questioning is an art. There are so many different client situations and scenarios. There's so many different client moods, client energies, client backgrounds, client beliefs. All of this needs to be taken into consideration when you craft a question. So this has a lot to do with your listening skills, so that you can listen for all of these different things to be able to articulate a powerful question. And then this also has to do with one of the a main Sacred Depths coaching principle, which I'll just mention to you briefly now, which is about coaching the what based on the who. Coaching the what based on the who. What unfortunately happens too often, and we're all guilty of this in one way or another, what happens too often, and this happens also when our curiosity isn't activated, by the way, is that we hear a situation like, I want to lose 20 pounds, or I want to get into a romantic relationship, or I want to grow my business, or I want to, you know, lead my team more effectively, whatever it is that you're working on with a client. You know, we hear something, we hear the situation, we hear the what, and then we just think that the what is the same, you know, it's just going to then be the same for everyone. But that's not true. We're going to coach one client who wants to lose 20 pounds very differently than another client that wants to lose 20 pounds. We're going to coach one client that wants to grow their business very differently than we're going to coach another client that wants to grow their business. And it's all based on the who, not on the what. So I can't give you an A plus B plus C. That's really kind of just BS. But what we can do is continue to look at elements that make up really powerful questions. The other thing that's important to mention, and I've already kind of hinted at this, is that there's no singular coaching skill that exists in a vacuum, and questioning is included in that. So the most masterful coaches are working all their skills at the same time. So in other words, for example, you can't ask masterful questions if you haven't been doing masterful listening. You also can't ask masterful questions if you haven't paid attention to the energetics of the coaching relationship, if you haven't equalized the playing field, like I was just sharing before. You can't ask the most masterful questions if you don't know how to create awareness, or if you don't know how to hold grief or anger, right? Because if you don't know how to hold those things, you're not going to be led to ask questions that will lead to those things. Or if you don't understand the nature of fear. The best questions are when everything really builds on each other and works together. Now, the next piece here that is really important, and it's related to the curiosity piece, but it's a little bit different. When you craft a question, don't expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. Do not be attached to the outcome. The moment that you as a practitioner begin to expect a particular answer, you're not going to ask the best question because it kills curiosity, right? And it also, when you expect an answer, then there's already judgment involved. The other reason why you don't ever want to expect a particular kind of answer or be attached to any kind of outcome, right, any kind of answer, is because if you don't end up getting the answer you were expecting from your client, it could then stop you in your tracks, right? It will feel like a doozy. Now, so there's another piece to this. When I say don't expect any kind of particular answer, that's one piece, but it's a little bit different than not being attached to an outcome. And let me explain a little bit more what I mean by this. This is such an important foundational principle, not just for questioning, but for all of coaching. If, for example, you have a client and they are coming to you because they're having a lot of trouble, let's say, in their marriage. If you as a practitioner become attached to your client keeping their marriage intact, then you are never going to be able to show up with your full presence, your full wisdom, all of your skills to ask the right questions. Because it may be, yes, that client is meant to keep their marriage intact, but it may be that marriage is not meant to stay intact. But the moment that you become attached, then you cannot ask the best questions. You're already leading, and you're leading based on an attachment to an outcome. So just take a moment and ask yourself honestly, when you're coaching, how often are you expecting a particular answer to a question or a particular coaching outcome? Just notice for yourself. So instead of expecting a particular answer or outcome, instead, what I want to remind you to do is to follow your natural curiosity, as we've been talking about, and your intuition. So one more note about this curiosity piece, because it's important. We want to be curious in our coaching, but we also always want to have the end goal for the session in mind. Now, again, we don't want to be attached to any end goal, but what I mean by this is we want to be curious, but we don't want to just start asking questions out of left field because our curiosity has taken us there, right? So just like a side note on that. So anyway, you can think about all of this in this way. A good question is going to be rooted in the following four things. Number one, listening to your client, to who they are, right? Not, remember, we always want to coach the what based on the who. So the first thing a good question is going to be rooted in is listening to your client and being attuned to their needs. The second thing a good question is going to be rooted in is your own curiosity and your own intuition. The third thing a good question is going to be rooted in is keeping track of the bigger picture agenda. Again, right, we want to be tuned in to the curiosity, to the intuition, but it's always contained under the bigger picture agenda. A lot of coaches sometimes lose that tracking. And then the fourth thing that a good question is going to be rooted in is your own experience as a practitioner. And what I mean by that is this is where the consulting does come in, right? Because you do know certain things from your own experiences. So, of course, I'm always using all of my wisdom, my life experience, what I know about human behavior, what I was mentioning before, one of the big components of Sacred Depths Coaching, understanding human behavior. I'm always using all of that, but it's being combined with listening to the who of what my client is, with being curious, and with keeping track of that bigger agenda. So I know you might be thinking to yourself right now, like, oh my gosh, how can I be thinking about all of those four things every time I ask a question? That sounds like a lot. Practice. Just the more you bring yourself aware, it can happen like clockwork. That's one of the reasons why I'm such a big advocate of practicing with others that are learning the same kinds of principles that you are. It really helps. Here's another principle for coaching that is really essential. And again, it's another one that's very obvious that we all know, but that we often forget. Remember that your client always has a choice. Remember that your client always has a choice. Again, I know that this is obvious, but we can oftentimes forget if we forget, we as practitioners get carried away with our client's limited thinking. So I'll give you an example of what I mean by this. Let's say you're having a conversation with your client and your client is sharing that her kids they're a mess. They just, the whole house is a mess. It's messy all the time. And your client says, it doesn't matter what I do, they just don't clean up and I am exasperated and I am at the end of my rope about this. So in this situation, your client is coming from a place of not having a choice. Can you guys see that? She's very helpless. In this situation, she feels like she just doesn't have a choice. This is just how it is. It's how it's going to be. And she's going to be frustrated and exasperated. But the truth is that we always have a choice. And that in this situation, your client has a choice as well. And part of your responsibility as a coach is to open up the point of choice with her. One of the most empowering things that we can do for our clients is help to shift them from a place of feeling like there is no choice to a place of seeing that there is a choice. It's just so empowering. And, you know, like, as a side note, I just want to say, like, and this is a big thing in Sacred Depths coaching, I really believe that as coaches are responsible, you know, we're responsible to help our clients with the situations that they bring forward and, you know, all the coaching and all of that. But another big purpose of who we are as coaches is to use the coaching container for corrective behavior, like bigger overarching corrective behavior for our clients. So in other words, in this situation, we may help our client with the messy children, but then there's a much bigger story here about using the container to help rewire the client from probably a chronic condition of never feeling like she has any choices to seeing possibilities in her life. So how can you help a client in this situation remember that she has choice? Well, there's a couple of things here. Number one, don't go into consulting mode, at least not right away. So, you know, let's say you're a parenting coach and you have a great trick for getting the kids to clean up. I would not go in with consulting on this right away, because that's not going to empower. You may eventually give the trick for sure, but there's inner work that needs to be done here first. Number two, also don't be attached to outcome, as we said earlier, right? So the moment you hear your client say this and you get attached to helping her have a clean house, to getting her that solution, then you've already killed the opportunity for breakthrough questions. There may indeed be a way for her to get her kids to clean up, but there may not be. Or the way may not reflect her values and her priorities and her energy, right? So instead of going into consulting mode right away, and instead of getting attached to outcome and then, you know, asking leading questions, because when you get attached to that outcome, then you'll start asking leading questions, right? Like, how can you get your kids to clean up, or, you know, whatever it is. Instead, I want you to think about creating choice. And there are a couple of ways to do this. So first and foremost, and this might actually, this is one of the most important things, is once a client shares something like this situation with you, you want to ask the question, what would you like to receive around this issue? What would you like to receive around this issue? This is almost a principle unto itself in Sacred Depths around getting clear on the intention first and not making assumptions about what your client's intention is, and giving your client the space to even know what they want, to clarify what they want and what their intention is. This is so important. because you could hear this situation from a client, my kids are so messy, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm so exasperated, right? And you might make the assumption that what she wants here is a solution to a clean house and to kids that listen to her, and that may be what she wants to receive, but it might not be. It might be that she just wants to be seen and heard in her frustration. It might be that she just really needs to be told that this is totally normal behavior from children. It may be that she wants a way to handle it so that she doesn't resent her kids, etc., right? There's so many possibilities here. Just by asking the question, what would you like to receive around this issue, can yield a breakthrough or a revelation in and of itself, because it may immediately open up choices for your client on how she wants to move forward. Other examples here of questions that really can help open up a choice for your client, again, instead of rushing into that problem-solving mode of, you know, how can we get the house clean or the kids to listen, whatever it is, you might want to ask the question, what's the growth opportunity for you here? If this situation were being presented because there's a growth opportunity for you, what is it, right? And it may be that it takes your client on a whole road at looking at how quickly she gets frustrated with things or whatever it is. Another question that may open up possibility of choice here is to actually ask, so where in this situation do you have a choice? Where in this situation do you have a choice? And that can open up inner and outer solutions for the client. There are other questions for sure, but hopefully that gives you an example of this principle, moving from this principle of the client always has a choice. So we can only have a choice philosophy with our clients if we practice it for ourselves. If we're not living this in our own life, it's very hard to have the wherewithal to see it when we're with our clients. And so I just want to ask you, you know, for yourself, on a scale of 1 to 10, in your own life, how good are you remembering? Are you at remembering that you have a choice? Just be honest with yourself on that, right? Is everything in your life, you know, I don't have a choice. I need to do this. I have no choice but to do that. It can only happen this way or not. Scale of 1 to 10, where are you at with that? So I'm going to guess that nobody is at a 10 with this one. If you are, you're just superhuman, right? So, how does this issue show up in your life? How is this, you know, when you're not coming from a choice philosophy, how is it impacting your life? Let's take a moment with that. What's one specific place in your life right now where you could really benefit from approaching it with more of a choice philosophy? What's one specific place in your life right now that could really benefit from being approached with a choice philosophy? We've all got one. And then for those of you that are working with clients, take a moment and just think about one of your current clients maybe one that is having a little bit of trouble right now, where you feel like you haven't quite gotten to the breakthroughs or the transformations that you would like with that client. What's one place where this client is assuming that she doesn't have a choice? Where's a place where this particular client is assuming that they don't have a choice? We can go a lot deeper, obviously, on the inner work here and the outer work on this one, but I wanted to just give you, like a little bit of a taste on that. Christine, I see your hand is raised. Hi. Are you there, Christine?
Hi. Which Christine?
You.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting, because it was my hand was up and then down, and I missed it. But actually, I had put it up. First of all, thank you very much. I've already had a breakthrough, and it's amazing how curiosity and shame, for me, play out. And so when you asked one of the questions you asked, regarding. I wrote it down somewhere, but for me I was taught that curiosity killed the cat, and curiosity is embarrassing, and curiosity is, so that was one. But then the other bit for me, which has really blown my mind away, is how I also don't want people curious about me.
When you said that, so that could really be blocking how
absolutely. So I was, when that revelation came and in my body I felt uncomfortable, and my throat was burning for a moment there, and I wanted to go to the toilet. It was all sorts of things happening, and then I realized, aha, I've just had a breakthrough. So for me, working around shame, being curious is shameful and will embarrass the next person. Is something I'll look at more.
Good. I'm so glad. Yeah, that's a really important direction.
Yeah, thank you. And the other one was, when you asked why do we go into consulting mode, I thought because I get bored. And then I was ashamed that I get bored. But later when you talked about the fact that we're intuitive, I am. So I'm kind of thinking, when will we get to this, the end of that?
So that's really great awareness too, right? And then the curiosity is so vital in that. You can slow that down for yourself a little bit to insert curiosity in there. Good, you've got a lot to work on there. I'm glad.
I do. Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Good. Okay. Let's keep on looking. So the next principle I want to look at, or the next element of a breakthrough question that I want to explore for a little bit, is this one. Be willing to be loving and bold. Be willing to be loving and bold. So what does this mean? What does that even mean? Well, what often happens for coaches and practitioners is that they either know how to be loving, most of us know how to be loving, or they know how to be bold, but they have trouble holding both at the same time, and usually it's the bold part that then ends up getting lost. Somehow along the way, we learned that we can either be loving or we can be bold, but we can't be both. And what oftentimes happens is that then we don't show up boldly enough for our clients, and when we're asking questions, we maybe get scared that if we ask a bold question, a client is going to get upset at us or angry or triggered or upset at themselves. And we fear that so so much that we shy away from taking risks in our questions and from really asking the penetrating questions that are going to activate our clients. Now, we can't have every question be a super bold question because that would be too intense and there wouldn't be enough space for integration of learning in that. But we do want to ask zingers sometimes. And we do want, when the situation calls for it, we do want to ask the bold questions. We want to be able to show up not being afraid of the client getting angry or triggered. So let me give you an example of this. Let's say you have a client that shares with you that they're working all the time and they're upset that they don't have enough time for themselves and their family. They're frustrated, they're upset. That they don't have enough time. So a good enough question, a question that is just good enough, it's kind of standard coaching, not sacred depths coaching, not so much breakthrough questioning, definitely not lovingly bold. A good enough question here might be, well, what can you do differently here, right? Or maybe another good enough question in this situation is, you know, what would help you make more time for yourself or your family, right? Those will yield some, can possibly yield some nice things, 100%. But if you're committed to the breakthrough questioning and in the sacred depths way, you want to be lovingly bold here. This is actually maybe a moment for a pattern break and to shake things up a little bit for the client, because back to our former principle of, you know, client always has a choice. When a client is saying, oh, I'm working all the time and there's nothing I can do and I'm so upset that I don't have enough time for myself and my family, they're coming from a philosophy of not having a choice, right? So an example of a breakthrough bold question here might be, why do you sense that you're addicted to your work? Now, I know the word addict or addiction can be triggering for some people, and that may or may not be a good thing, and you may want to vary that a little bit, right? But can you see how this is much bolder and can possibly produce go much deeper? Why do you sense you're addicted to your work? Or another example might be, when did you start making your work a higher priority than yourself and your family? It is a little triggering, right? It is a little jarring. You have to deliver it with love and with full respect for the client, and not sitting on your high pedestal or thinking that you're any better, right? Back to energetics of coaching and equalizing the playing field. But you do want to be bold sometimes. So again, being lovingly bold requires inner work. It requires completely respecting your client, as I just said, and it requires not being afraid of the client maybe getting angry or a little bit triggered. So there's so much for us to unpack around this on the inner level, and we'll just toe dip into it right now because, you know, I just want you to, like, get a little taste of some of the inner work here for you. On a scale of 1 to 10, how scared or concerned are you that your clients are going to get angry or upset with you if you push the edge a little bit? How scared are you that they may get angry or upset with you? So just notice for yourself, right? You know, when we have more time, go into like the, you know, we can look at the origins of this for you and the belief systems behind it and the archetypes involved in it. But for now, I just want you to kind of get that sense for yourself. Okay. So what I want to talk about next, for us to take a look at next, is language. There's so much to say about language when it comes to questioning. And it's something actually in Sacred Depths we look at. The main place where we look at language is in the Creating Awareness module, because language is so important. Creating awareness is a part of questioning, but you can create awareness in lots of different ways, and language is such an important part of it. But let's look at some of the pieces here right now. So there's lots of different ways to use language. I'm going to go through a bunch of them. So first of all, as much as you can, you want your questions to be succinct, to be clear and direct. That's what I mean by succinct, clear and direct. And usually the most powerful, not always, but most of the time, the most powerful questions are the ones that have the least words. If you're going on for, like, you know, a minute on a question, it's probably not as succinct as it could be, especially if it's a zinger question, right? Clear and direct, few words. This is something that I'm working on all the time as well. A good way to practice this is after a session to look at some of the questions that you ask and see if you can reword them and see how succinct you can get. It's a great practice. Also, another piece to being succinct, and again, none of these are absolute rules, but they're like most of the time rules. There's always exceptions. But another thing, part of being succinct, is to ask one question at a time. Again, there are a couple of situations where asking two back-to-back is helpful and effective, but one of the big mistakes that I see a lot of coaches make is that they will ask more than one question at a time. So you want to watch out for that. Use your client's terminology and language mixed with moments of new terminology and language in order to create awareness. I'm going to say that one again. You want to really think about using any language that your client uses is language that resonates with them. And so you definitely want to use your client's terminology because it resonates with them. So this requires listening, right? If they're married, do they call the person they're married to their husband or their wife, or do they call that person their partner? Or do they call that person their lover? Their life partner, whatever it is, right? So you want, when you're formulating questions, and really in all of coaching, to use your client's terminology, but not always. You want to mix it up sometimes with introducing new terminology as well. So let's break this down a little bit more. When your client hears their own language and terminology being mirrored in your questions, it helps your client feel heard and seen, and it helps them know that you, as their coach, are curious and interested in them and in their world. Now, using clients' language, there's two levels to this. So one is to use the actual terminology that your client uses. But the other is to activate your listening skills and help and notice what your client's already established filters are and use clients, use language to help them learn through their already established filters. So what I mean by this, and we talk a lot about filters in the deep listening in Sacred Depths, but like real quick, one aspect of this is, and this is just one little aspect, but it's an important one, listen for the books that your client reads, the movies or the TV shows that they watch, what is present in their world, and use metaphors or mentions of it. So, for example, if your client is really into yoga, when you ask questions, you may want to use a yoga metaphor. If your client has given birth, they like get the process of birth and it's something they're connected to, you may be talking about a completely different situation, but use a birth metaphor. Talk about the quickening. You know, ask a question about the labor versus the coming, the pushing. I don't know. I'm going to mess it up right now, but you guys know what I mean. The pregnancy versus the labor, right? The opening, all of that stuff. I won't get too graphic here. If you know that your client really appreciates nature, use metaphors from nature. If you know that your client is very corporate-oriented, maybe when you're talking about their family, you may refer to it as their team, right? So you want to use clients' language and terminology, both what they use and then metaphorically based on what you know they resonate with. That being said, you also want to interject sometimes with new terminology, as I said earlier, to create new awarenesses. So one practice that I find really helpful, and well, let me take a step back, because when you change your language, you change a filter. When you change language, you change a filter. So when you bring a new concept in or new language or terminology in that the client hasn't used, it has the opportunity to change how they are looking at a situation, how they're filtering through it. So the more, a good practice here when you're coaching is to ask yourself, what concept would be helpful next for this client? What's the concept that's going to be helpful next for this client? And when you ask yourself that question, so this is a lot about tracking your client and where their progress is, right? But when you ask yourself this question, what concept is going to be helpful next for this client, you may hear the word, your inner wisdom may bring up the concept of metamorphosis. And then you may ask a question where you introduce the concept of metamorphosis. That doesn't, when I say introduce, I don't mean that your client doesn't know what this is, but that you haven't been speaking about this, but the situation really calls for an exploration of metamorphosis, right? What is the metamorphosis that you're undergoing here? What is the metamorphosis that you've been avoiding here, et cetera? Just yesterday I was on a coaching call with a client, and now I just do this like clockwork for myself. I don't stop and say, okay, what's the concept that's helpful next? I've practiced this enough that it just comes up naturally, and I could see very clearly that what needed to be the concept that needed to be introduced was around catastrophic thinking, right? And so I crafted a question even though we had never spoken about catastrophic thinking. And I didn't say to her, right, this is the difference between consulting and coaching. I didn't say, we need to look at your catastrophic thinking right now, right? But I introduced the language. I introduced the terminology with a question. I don't remember exactly what the question was, but I think it was something like, how is catastrophic thinking coming into play here, right? So using the client's terminology and then adding your own. Next concept, and this is an important one. As a general rule, ask open questions. I know this is another obvious one, but again, just take a moment and think for yourself, how often in your coaching do you default to yes or no questions or to multiple choice questions? So there are a few moments, types of situations where yes, no questions are actually exactly what need to be asked, and are the most powerful. And I won't get into it too much today, but generally it's when the client is right on the verge of making an internal commitment or decision. In that situation, you want to ask a yes or no question so that they can really affirm the yes or the no. But other than that, as a general rule, open-ended questions are more in the philosophy of curiosity, right? And not being attached to an answer and not being attached to an outcome, and activate more creativity and solutions, awarenesses, all of that. Related to this, don't ask leading questions. Don't ask leading questions. So let me give you an example of this. Maybe your client says, I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines at work. I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines at work. A leading question here, which is not as productive, is, do you think it's because you procrastinate? That's actually general. That's basically a yes or no question, right? Do you think it's because you procrastinate? A non-leading question would be, why do you think you miss deadlines? Or if you sense that the concept of procrastination is one that's ready to be introduced here because of other things that you've heard from the client, you may ask, what role does procrastination play, if any, in here? Don't make assumptions. This is a little bit related to expecting an answer, right? So let's say, for example, your client says, this was a bad week with my husband. I said all the wrong things again. When the coach is making an assumption, they may say, that seems to happen a lot. What's going on with you around that? A non-assumption is, well, tell me more about what happened. Because it may just be the client's filter that she said all the wrong things, but we don't want to assume that, right? We want to ask more questions to help create more awareness there. Here's another example. Not making assumptions. This one happens to me a lot. A client may say to me, well, I want to take, especially when we first start working, I want to take my business much bigger. So the assumption, the coach that's just going on assumptions may say, wonderful, I'm so excited and you're so ready for more clients and higher rates. But what's actually much more helpful is to come from non-assumption. So if a client says, I want to take my business much bigger, possible question there. That sounds exciting. What does bigger mean to you? Right? So we don't want to make the assumption that bigger means more clients, higher rates. We don't want to make an assumption about what healthy means. We don't want to make an assumption about what a good relationship means. We don't want to make an assumption about what success means. We don't, you know, any of that. Another piece about language. I know I'm giving you guys a lot of info all at once. We'll pause in a little bit for some questions. I want you to think about your word choices when you're crafting questions. One shift in a word can make all of the difference in a question. So, for example, think about the difference between these two questions. What would feel empowering for you, right? Maybe you're talking with a client, versus what would feel pleasurable for you? Now, why would you choose empowering over pleasurable or pleasurable over empowering? Well, it's back to coaching the what based on the who. To listening, you know, it might be that the client used the word empowering or pleasurable, or it may be that you're introducing a new concept or terminology that you sense is going to be useful for the client here, right? Or think about the difference between these two questions. How do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are, right? So important, it's just one word added in there, but it's an important distinction. Or think about the difference between these two. What can you do to move forward versus what will you do to move forward? Now, one isn't better than the other, but again, you're always coaching the what based on the who and formulating your questions based on the who. A client that is ready to move forward, they're right on that edge, they're ready to take action, it is time, for that client, you're going to ask, what will you do to move forward? Or maybe it's a client that in the past hasn't taken action and now you sense they're really ready, right? What will you do? But if it's a client that they're still in the exploration phase, of whatever you're talking about, whatever you're strategizing about, it's going to be much more effective to say, what can you do to move forward, right? It's just one little word, can versus will, but it can be more effective, you know, coaching, you know, based on who you're coaching. Okay. The next principle here for breakthrough questioning, and this is a really important one. This is actually, like, one to me, it's one of the biggest. Connect the dots. Use your questions to connect the dots. So what does this mean? I just cannot underestimate this one. Most coaches need to slow down the line of questioning. I don't just mean, sometimes we actually need to slow down our pace, right? Like that, how we're actually saying the words, but that's not what I'm talking about here. What I'm talking about here is slowing down the line of questioning and so that you can help connect the dots for your clients. Okay, so what does this mean? Well, especially if you're on this call, especially if you're attracted to learning with me, I know already you're a smarty pants. You're intuitive, you have a lot of wisdom, you're a smarty pants. And it can be used to your advantage 100%, but also if you don't check it, it can be a liability. Because when you're a smarty pants, your brain already sees something for your client or gets it for your client. Your brain's already made the connections. But your client hasn't necessarily already made the connection. So you may already be jumping to the next thing because you see, well, of course she's doing this because two sessions ago she was talking about this other thing and I see the pattern and, you know, whatever it is, right, that you're already seeing. But you need to slow that down. You need to slow down the line of questioning. And by the way, this is important for effective marketing too. A big mistake that people make when they're writing copy, when they're marketing, is like they've already connected the dots on why a client may need their work, or if a client is feeling this way, it's because of that, but they're not making the connection in the marketing, and they've lost the prospect. So you don't want to rush to the end goal. And you want to ask the questions that will help your clients connect the dots. You want to know when is the right moment for asking a question about action and moving forward. And this is where this often happens, that a coach may see all the things and then they jump to the, like, what can you do? What's the strategy? What are the next three things? You know, all of that. But when you're connecting the dots, you want to know the difference between when to ask the questions about action moving forward versus when is it the right moment for exploring inner feelings, for exploring motivations, for exploring fears, for exploring obstacles. And I can tell you, whenever we're connecting the dots and we're slowing things down, when you're not practiced at it, a lot of fear can come up because you naturally want to provide as much as you can for the client and you end up feeling like, oh my gosh, this is so slow. They're not getting what they want. They're not, you know, they're not getting to the end. We're not moving quick enough. But the exact opposite is usually true. When you slow it down, when you take the time to connect the dots, that's when the deeper learning happens. That's when the deeper awareness happens, and that's when the integration of the learning happens. Sometimes the client has already connected the dots as well, but the slowing it down helps integrate it. So speaking of slowing things down, in a good coaching session, there's always some tension. In a good coaching session, there's always some tension. So what I mean by this is that your client shouldn't always have the answer right away. Sometimes your questions should stump your client for a moment. Another big mistake that happens is that a coach will ask a client a really good question and the client gets stumped, and the coach doesn't give enough space for the client to work through the question. Instead, the coach gets scared and they rush in with another question, or they rush in with saying something or providing the answer that they thought, you know, whatever it is, and then you're stopping the transformation process in its tracks. Your questions should challenge your clients and stretch them and challenge their assumptions. And silence can sometimes be exactly what's needed. And, you know, silence doesn't work when you haven't already established a strong coaching container. That's why in Sacred Depths we always start with how to create the strongest container. So when there isn't a strong container, it won't hold the silence. It will feel uncomfortable. But if you've created a strong coaching container, it can absolutely hold the silence for the processing to happen that sometimes needs to happen. So this next piece is actually related to connecting the dots. I probably should have mentioned it with this. Make connections. So one of the most powerful jobs of a coach is to make connections or help a client see connections. That's when a breakthrough can happen in an instance. So let me give you some examples of this. A client, maybe you're talking to a client and she's sharing that she's on social media and she's seeing all of these posts and she feels really bad about herself and is just she's constantly comparing herself to others on social media. If you are using this philosophy, the Sacred Depths philosophy of making connections, that will lead you to maybe articulate a question like this. What life situation does this remind you of, right? Because if she's comparing herself on social media, that didn't just appear once she got on social media. There's a pattern there. There's a history there, right? Or she may be telling you about this social media thing, and you remember that on a previous session, she was describing her relationship with her sister as very competitive, right? So then as she's talking about the social media and feeling bad about herself and comparing herself, you know, a really powerful question might be, how does this connect to your competitive relationship with your sister? Make the connections. Here's another example of that. Maybe you've got a client that's overworking and, you know, just working way too much. And maybe in a previous session, she mentioned that she struggled with other extreme or compulsive behaviors like over-exercising. So it's your job as the coach there to make a connection. You might say, your overworking reminds me of your over-exercising. What might be the connection between those two? And I often, so that I'm not leading, I often like to say, if any, you know, or tell me if you don't think there's a connection there also, right? Because you don't want to lead. But you do want to see if you can make the connections. All right, let's pause here. And I'd love to hear what you're taking so far, what's coming up for you, what you're seeing, what feels really important, and what questions you have for me. Star two. Cynthia. Cynthia, oh, hold on. There we go.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go.
So you can hear me all right?
Yeah.
So I was actually having a conversation this morning about choice with somebody else. It was interesting that you brought that up. We were talking about, you know, clients that, you know, their first question is, do you take insurance? When they call me up, and what he was talking about was showing them that they actually have a choice, not so much in that insurance versus non-insurance based practice, but within my practice itself, they have a choice of what they can do to meet their goals versus going to an insurance based practice where they don't give you that choice of, you know, this is where your goals are and this is what we're going to meet. Instead, they just, you know, have you go to an aide and set this whole program up without bothering to really ask them. So your choice was interesting to bring in kind of what I'm trying to do to, I'm going to just use this word, convince people to come to see me, being able to convert them from leads to my client. And I think that's where I'm having a hard time in probably showing them that. So I'm not really sure what I'm asking you.
Yeah. So I know, Cynthia, that you're here to like apply this specifically to sales and enrollment conversations. And so, I can see where the question is coming from. And my sense is that it's going to be a combo of some questions, but also creating awareness in other ways. So probably, and I don't want to get too much off topic here, but I think probably, for example, a piece that you're going to want to bring into those conversations is, which is related here to choice, is like one size fits all versus personalization. And I think you're going to have to do some creating awareness, like flat out explaining and educating on some of that. But then I think the follow-up questions are going to be important after you actually like state, after you educate on the difference. So, for example, you know, after you do that, you may ask a question like, well, this is a yes or no question, but I think it's important here. Is it a priority for you to get a personalized plan or not? Has it worked for you in the past to be plunked into a one-size-fits-all strategy? Or do you need something else? Or even just after you explain the difference between the two to say, like, what's your sense of what you really need here?
Okay.
So I think maybe doing a little exploration around the one size fits all and the no choice versus the choice is going to be really important for your people.
Okay.
Is that helpful?
That's extremely helpful.
Good. I'm glad.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Christine.
Okay. I'm hoping I'm going to ask this question in a way that actually makes sense. I'm looking for some guidance or your opinion on what would be the best way to handle it if you've gotten to like the last 15 minutes of your session. And as a result of asking these powerful questions, the client has suddenly come face to face with a really sobering awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And for me in the past, my struggle is I will end up working with them to move past that. But sometimes then we're going an extra 15 minutes or half an hour over the session so that they leave feeling better. Is there a more appropriate way to handle that? Using questions when towards the end of the session?
Mm-hmm.
The answer
I love the question. So first, let me just say that there, you know, every now and again, this should not be the standard. This should not be the norm. But every now and again, it is going to be appropriate to go a few minutes over because you don't want to leave a client hanging, right? So that can happen. But what I sense is happening for you, just based on what you just shared, is that you have a fear of your client being uncomfortable. And because of that, you're going over because, as you said, I forget the exact language that you just said, but you want to make sure they're okay before you end the session. Mm-hmm. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, I have this perception that for them to feel that they're getting their money's worth, even though they may be having big shifts and awarenesses during the session, that when they leave, they feel better than
yes.
when we started.
Yes, and what I'm going to say is that that's an attachment to outcome.
Okay.
And that sometimes the biggest growth and transformation happens when we allow a client to feel uncomfortable for a little bit. And that can only happen effectively if we've created a solid coaching container and that the client trusts us in the container enough to end a session feeling a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, if that happens, there are a couple of things that I do. So first of all, I know that my coaching containers are like airtight and so solid. So I'm not worried at all. I'm not attached at all to the client feeling better in that moment. Because let's be honest, you know, transformation is a messy thing and it's not mm-hmm. all like lollipops and rainbows. And we need to go to the shadows and the crags sometimes. So you first just like energy follows energy because I believe that so strongly, because I trust in that so strongly, my clients go there with me and they trust in that too and they trust in our process. So that's number one, energetics, and this is why I start Sacred Depths off with energetics. We look at it throughout, like they're always the most important. But from there, if we're getting to the end of a session and something really big has come up, and you know it's we're getting close to ending the session, there are a couple of things that I may do. So first of all, you know, and again, it all depends on context and what's come up. But one question I may ask is, why is it important that you're feeling really uncomfortable right now?
Mm-hmm.
And that will create awareness and allow the client to have more patience with themselves and their discomfort. So again, there's different questions you can ask, but do you see where I'm going with that? And it has to start with your inner energetics and not having the fear.
Okay, perfect.
Is that helpful?
That's very helpful. And the one case I just ended up, she was a psychologist, and I just asked her, what would you tell your client right now?
Yeah, that's another great question. And then, you know, if we do end where it's like not totally, you know, resolved or there's discomfort, and this is part of the container, I will give a homework assignment for them to be working on. And I will likely check in over email over the next day or two and see mm-hmm. how they're doing. And what's evolving for them.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Great question. All right. I think this would be a really good moment for us to have a little practicum and to practice our questioning skills and practice, you know, pulling in some of the things that we've been talking about today. So here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to call on a volunteer to just share briefly about a situation in your life right now, something that's going on for you that you would like support on. And then what we'll do is I'm just going to ask you guys to ask questions. the person that is the presenting the situation, you're not going to answer any of the questions, and you will just ask the questions one at a time, but let's practice formulating the questions and seeing how it goes. And so here's what's going to be most helpful in the most helpful here. We're going to get this practice ground for you to actually take a moment to craft the question, to think about all the principles we've been talking about, to think about your language, to write it down, right? So I want you to take some time to think about it. I have really seen that the more you can practice this way, then the more it just becomes second nature when you're actually coaching. So we'll just see how it goes. Who would be willing to be our volunteer for this? Who's got a situation? Oh, great. I think this is Teresa. Is that you? Are you there, Teresa?
I am.
Hi.
Hi.
All right. Share with us briefly the situation that you would like some more awareness on.
So since I've been coming back from a health challenge, one of the things that I've not been as full in my practice as I would like, and part of what I've been focusing on instead of my practice is my body and the care of my body and rebuilding its strength and feeling safe and good in it. And one of the things I'm aware of is that it's very challenging to, quote unquote, make myself go do what is being suggested for me to do that. Part of it is it's not that I don't enjoy it. It's just hard to get there. It's hard to make myself, and I don't always enjoy it, but it's hard to make myself get up and do it. And so what I've been doing instead is doing alternative things like dancing and things that bring me a little more pleasure, but it's not building the strength that I'm desiring. And the other piece of that is one of the reasons this feels really important to me is because I know I hold in my belief system on some level the fraud factor, like how can I be a healer and a coach if I'm not in mastery
of your own healing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let me just ask a couple of other questions just so we can get a little bit more information here to formulate our other questions. Let me just ask you this, actually. If this were a full coaching session, like 45-minute coaching session, mm-hmm. what would your intention be for the session? What is it that you really want to receive?
I kind of have two things pop up at the same time. And one is the fraud factor, and two is what is the resistance to do it? What is the resistance? Is it because it's really not good for my body and I'm in resistance because my intuition is telling me that, or is it because, or is there something underlying that I'm not connecting with?
Is it your inner wisdom or is it a real fear? Is it your inner wisdom coming from real intuition that I shouldn't be taking, you know, doing these things to my body? Or is it because there is a resistance based on fear?
Yeah, a fear or a victim or something,
yeah.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
I'm not conscious of.
Yeah. Okay, good. Anything else that you want us to know about this situation that feels important?
I think one of the things that feels important is that I do think that because I experience a lot of pain in my body regardless of whether I'm doing something or not, that somehow does play a factor. And so I think it's important that people would know that that currently the pain is still pretty high regardless all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're experiencing a lot of pain.
I'm consistently in a 4 and commonly in a 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
Which is quite a bit, I think, for me. And I say that because I generally have a pretty high pain tolerance and and have really been focused on not forcing myself to do things and to really practice my self-care and also not wanting my self-care to be a form of I don't want to avoid my self-care when it could be in that manner, because the thing that I'm having resistance to is kickboxing. Because my PT has suggested that I start doing, just so you, that might be important to know that,
yeah.
Too, because it's interval training and it builds strength, it builds stamina, and I've done it in the past, so it's something that I know and I'm familiar with, and I know how to track my body with it, and but it's a lot.
Yeah. Okay, good. And then the other thing I want to ask, I'm trying hard not to coach you here, other people to ask questions, but just because I know you, I think it's just important to know that a big piece of the work that you do is help other people get out of pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think that's enough for us to work with, so thank you. Thank you so much. And Teresa, you can do this along with everybody else, right? So just pretend that was a situation that a client just presented you with. So what I'd love for everybody to do right now is to write down 2 or 3 questions that you might ask this client. You know, in other types of practicums, I'd ask you about maybe question sequences or, you know, this or that. But for now, just, you know, the questions that come to mind that, you know, based on everything we've looked at today, you sense would help create some breakthroughs and important self-awarenesses and shifts. What are some questions that you might ask this client? I'll give you guys a minute to think on that. Write that down. All right, so let's hear your questions. Star 2, what would be some great questions to ask this client? And I'll ask that you just share them like one at a time, and then I'll circle back to you if you've got more than one question that you want to share. What would you ask this client? All right, Christine R.
What are you learning from going through this situation that will benefit your clients now and in the future?
Nice. What are you learning from this situation that will benefit your clients now and in the future? I love that. And I sense that, you know, back to the principle of being succinct, I have a sense that that question could be even more succinct and pop mm-hmm. even more. So just mm-hmm. take a moment. How might you ask that in an even more succinct way?
What gifts will you be able to share with your clients from this experience?
Yes. Can you see how that's a straight, direct line in?
Yes.
Beautiful. Really nice. Good. Let's hear some more questions that you guys have. Who is this? I feel like I should know this number, but I don't. 0657.
That's Anne.
Oh, hi, Anne.
Hi.
I knew I knew that number.
Hi.
From Curriculum Lab.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right.
What question have you got?
So the last question was actually very similar to one that I had. So the other one was pertaining to the kickboxing. Knowing what you know about kickboxing, how can you apply that knowledge to achieve your goals in smaller intervals so that you don't feel like you're pushing yourself dangerously hard?
Yeah. Yeah, good. It's such a good question about kind of like breaking down to the next baby step. And I'm going to say the same thing to you that I said to Christine.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can make that just a little more succinct.
Right. I'm trying to type and think at the same time. That's not working. How can you use your existing knowledge of kickboxing to break your plan down into more manageable baby steps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I still feel like there's
I always have too many words. Yeah.
That's my problem. I think it's a little bit of like a how many words thing, and a little bit of a let me see if I can whip something up here. That's a version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And this may not be exactly where you're going, you can tell me, but maybe something like, if dancing isn't quite it, what would be a baby step version of kickboxing? How does that feel for you?
Yeah, it feels like it's going in a different direction from where I was envisioning. Because I was wanting to validate at the same time the, like, you're not a fraud. You know a lot of things about a lot of things. So
mm-hmm.
how can you use what you know about this one thing that affirms your competency and also meets your
there.
Need.
Just stop there. You just asked the question.
Oh, okay.
So first you created awareness. You obviously are very wise. You know a lot. So how can you use what you know about kickboxing to affirm your competency?
And to help heal your body at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Good, good.
Thanks.
Beautiful. Thank you. Who else? Star 2. What else might be some good questions to ask here. Don't be shy. Think about all the things she mentioned, the fraud factor. She quickly mentioned the word victim in there. She mentioned not knowing the difference in the situation between her inner wisdom and resistance. What are some other questions that you guys have got? If you've already raised your hand, you can also re-raise it. Or if you're feeling stumped, let me know that you're stumped. I have a sense it's not so much that you guys are stumped, but you're feeling shy about asking questions. Teresa, what's a question that you might ask yourself? Get you off mute here.
Well, one of the things that I wrote down was, what might you be resisting or afraid of if you were to find the edge to push yourself without going too far?
Yeah. Beautiful. I love that question, and I bet you're already coming up with some thoughts and answers there for yourself. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Because
good. Oh, sorry. Oops. Hold on. Keep
edge,
on going.
But
because what? Say that again?
It's that because, and just listening to all the questions, there's a pattern that I'm noticing. And because you know in my past I've really pushed myself.
Yeah.
But one of the patterns that I've noticed that there's this other aspect of PT that I am very resistant to pushing myself to the next level. And so it's like, so there's this pattern in this part of PT and then this other part that's being suggested of PT outside of my norm. And there's a little bit of resistance in both areas, and so that's kind of why I was thinking, well, what is the resistance? What is the fear of what might happen?
Yeah, yeah, and that can
I know there's this fear of going back into that mode that I've worked so hard to break away from.
Yes,
I'm very conscious of that.
Yes. Good. So let's just take this a step further. So you just answered that there is a fear of going back into this
mm-hmm.
pattern that you worked so hard to get out of. So if you were the coach, what would be the next question you would ask there if that's the client that your answer gave, if that's the answer that your client gave you?
How can you know, what are the ways that you know you can trust yourself?
Yes.
Stay in the progress that you've been making.
Yes. Yes. So that's a classic question of helping a client connect in with the resources that they already have and trust what they know to be true, which can then also help open up to be willing to go out on the edge a little bit more. Awesome. Good. Good self-coaching.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's see. I just took 2772 off mute. I know you shared before. I don't remember your name.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Joanna. Yeah, it's Snow. So, yeah, if I was understanding the situation correctly, I heard the client share that she wanted to grow her business. So my question would be, how will growing your business help you take better care of yourself?
Nice. Yeah, she mentioned that real quick in the beginning, but that was definitely a piece in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Good. Good. Christine, not Christine R, but Christine from Kenya.
Okay. The question that I came up with is, what would make bearing the pain in this process worth it?
Ah, I like that question, because if there isn't an attachment to outcome in the question,
yeah.
It's an excellent question, right? If there's an attachment to outcome there, then it's like, okay, what can we do to make you bear this? That's not going to be helpful. But if there isn't attachment to outcome in that question, it can really help the client see if there is anything that would make
I'm genuinely curious as to, okay, why would somebody go through this? There must be something at the end of it all. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. Yeah, very good. Good. Christine R.
What would little Teresa need from adult Teresa in order to feel safe and positively parented so that she could move forward with the kickboxing routine?
I like it a lot. So one question, and I just love all of it. The one question in my mind is about the last part. It may be more effective to say to move forward, maybe not specify the kickboxing routine, but to move forward with a routine.
Okay.
So that way it will open it up a little bit more in case there's another possibility in here that's more aligned for her. Yeah, I love that, and I'm so happy you're bringing some of the inner child pieces in. Cynthia.
I'm back.
Hey.
So this is actually a question that in different words that I ask others is, what value would it add to your life if you could get back to your normal routine?
I like that question. I just want to make sure that there's not an assumption when you're asking that question, there's not an assumption on your part that the kickboxing is the right route for her.
Well, that's why I left it as back to your normal routine versus saying getting back to kickboxing.
Good. Yeah, I like it. Very powerful. Good. So some other directions in here that might be helpful. You know, we've covered a bit of them, and of course we'd want some answers to the questions to get into some more crags. But based on, you know, everything that Teresa shared, another way to go or another piece to bring in would be, she mentioned the victim, right? So there's a couple of questions that might be appropriate here. One question might be, what role is your inner victim playing in this situation? Or you can kind of go look at the flip side of it. Because she mentioned the victim, we need to find the more empowered part of her and what that one has to say. So there may be a question in there of, what does the empowered part of you want you to know? What does the empowered part of you want you to know? Or what does the wise part of you want you to know? Another question that might be really effective in this situation. She was talking about resistance. Whenever resistance is present, this is something we look at a lot in the Befriend Your Fear technique. Whenever resistance is present, resistance is a symptom of fear. And fear is oftentimes connected to taking a risk. So that might be a new concept to introduce here. And you could ask the question, what would be at risk for you if you were to trust the wisdom that's been coming through, right? The wisdom has been to not do the kickboxing. Any other thoughts or questions coming through that you want to share? Star two. These have all been really great. Excellent. So I've got a little piece of homework for all, so I shouldn't say little. There's a really great exercise that I want to invite you guys to do on your own time. So as I've been saying, a great way to get better at crafting breakthrough questions is to take time and space out of sessions to practice crafting questions. And one really great way to do this is to have a little bit of a journaling session with yourself and to spend just 3-4 minutes writing out a situation that you've got going on in your life, whatever it is, with your work, with a relationship, with your health, with a whatever, right? So you don't have to write it out in complete detail. You kind of know the detail, but, you know, I'd spend 3-4 minutes writing out the situation. And then you want to read over what you've written and formulate take the time to really formulate and craft 5 questions on it. And what you can do is you can go through all the notes from today and see, like, you know, are these questions coming from a place of choice? Is curiosity activated? You can look at the different language pieces that we looked at, you know, so on and so forth. But I want to recommend everybody do that at least once. You'll really learn a lot, and it's a great, great practice. So what we've been looking at today really is just it's been so much. I know I shared a lot of principles with you, and also in a lot of ways it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to breakthrough questioning and when it comes to masterful coaching. And I want to speak for a moment about the difference between a breakthrough and a transformation. This is important, and some of you have heard this from me before, if you have, listen even more closely. And this is something that doesn't get talked about a lot in coaching, and it gets overlooked, and it's a big problem. So breakthroughs are super sexy, right? And we see the word breakthrough a lot out there, and I had a breakthrough, and you know, all of that. But what's happened is that in a lot of ways, the concept of a breakthrough has become synonymous with the concept of transformation, but the two are actually different, and the difference is vitally important. A breakthrough is a new piece of awareness that is really important for a client to be aware of, or a new feeling that is essential or vital,
or a new sense of being. And breakthroughs are amazing. We want those new awarenesses. We want those new feelings. We want those new senses of being. But in sacred depths, we really like believe strongly that a breakthrough isn't actually enough. The breakthrough is the new piece of information, the new feeling, the new sense of being. A transformation is a long-lasting change. In order to create a transformation, you need to help your clients take the breakthroughs that you create together and apply them persistently and consistently until a long-lasting change in thinking, in habit, in action, in feeling is created. What happens too often in the coaching industry, the transformational industry, is the breakthrough, which again is amazing, but it's never followed through to the transformation. And if you're on this call, then my guess is that you are someone who, like me, is committed to co-creating breakthroughs and also committed to co-creating transformations with your clients. And you're also probably someone who's committed to lifelong learning, to becoming more and more masterful as a practitioner, and to going as far as you can to co-create really extraordinary results with your clients. My guess is that it's not enough for you to leave things at status quo with your clients, and that you truly desire and know that you're meant to be the type of practitioner who cuts through the limiting beliefs with clients, who helps clients make friends with their fears, who helps them step into the bigness of who they are, who knows exactly how to support clients through their stickiest blocks and obstacles. And as I mentioned at the very beginning of our call, this is what I'm committed to. This is why I am here. And I've dedicated my career to training really smart, soulful, intuitive, exceptional practitioners how to do all of this and more. And, you know, as I shared earlier, what I've found in my own coaching practice and in my clients' practices after I fully train them over a period of time is that knowing how to artfully and gracefully and effectively go deep in your practice allows you to not only totally satisfy your clients with incredible transformation and revelations and breakthroughs, but it also positions you as one of the best as a practitioner, and it sets you apart from others in your field. It supports you to sign and to re-sign and re-sign clients who want to continue working with you for years because they're so satisfied with the transformation in themselves. And then it brings in more referrals from all of those satisfied clients. It creates more ease because you don't have to worry that you're not doing a good enough job or not going deep enough or not satisfying your clients enough. And maybe most importantly, you end up feeling 100 times more fulfilled in yourself and who you are as a practitioner. So all of that is to say that this is the part of the call where I just want to take a few minutes and really take the honor of sharing with you about how I can support you to become an even more exceptional practitioner through the Sacred Depths Coaching Certification, if that's something that's been on your mind. And I will be brief, but I do really want to share about this
with you. So Sacred Depths is a 10-month comprehensive, no stones left unturned coach training that really prepares you to be a cream of the crop coach, like an exquisite coach that your clients really adore and remember forever and want more of over and over again. And in our 10 months together, you really receive everything you need to become a coach or practitioner with what I like to call staying power, because there's a lot of fly-by-night in this industry, and we don't want that. The program is really like nothing else you'll find out there, and it's the only program that really covers the advanced coaching skills and techniques. And it's the only one that covers that trifecta that I was talking about at the beginning of the call, the mastery of skills, the mastery of human behavior, and all of the inner work, the inner mastery. So I'll just briefly walk you through some of the specific topics and modules and skills and techniques that you learn through the certification. There's so much in Sacred Depths that it's so comprehensive that I actually can't even walk you through all of it right now, but I do just want to give you the highlights. The training itself is divided into four units. The first unit is the core training methodology. And we look at everything from the coaching container and coaching energetics and how to create strong and powerful client relationships. We go deep into listening skills. We do the full breakthrough questioning skills, creating awareness skills, reflecting the truth skills, co-creating visions with clients, how to actually get clients started on their goals, how to strategize effectively with clients, no matter what your expertise is. So that first section is all of the core methodology, and it's both basic as well as advanced techniques in all the core. The second segment of the program, and by the way, most coaching programs just end there. That is the whole coaching program. But we do so much more in Sacred Depths. So from there, we go and we spend a whole unit on everything that you need to know in order to move your clients through the inevitable obstacles that are going to come up, the inevitable fears that are going to come up. So much of coaching these days is about, okay, let's create the goal, let's create, you know, or the vision, let's create the strategy, and then execute. And so many coaches end up feeling deflated because shadow comes up, because fears come up, because negative thought patterns come up, and they don't know how to handle it. So in the second unit, I teach you the entire Befriend Your Fear coaching process. I teach you all about the five resistance archetypes and how to handle them. And those archetypes are, some of them are the victim, the judge, the know-it-all, the flake, the teacher, all of the ways that clients sabotage the coaching process and the relationship and exactly how to handle all of it. In this unit, we look at rewiring negative thought patterns, and I give you an entire process based on neuroscience. To rewire those negative thought patterns. We do a module on undoing the cycle of self-sabotage, which is also related to the myth of perfection. We look at how to create accountability and effective follow-through with clients. And then we also look at what I like to call embracing the mystery, which is so important because there's too many go, go, go and rah, rah and just do it and hell yeah coaches out there. And of course we want to motivate our clients, but when we are only in that mode, we bypass human natural rhythms. We bypass the need to let go, the need to be still, the need to not always have clarity. And so we go deep into how to hold that.
with clients. We do, we look at helping clients create radical acceptance. We're the only coach training that looks at family dynamics and projections and triggers that can happen for you as the coach, you know, when you're coaching, and how to handle your own triggers and projections. I give you a full training on how to help clients be more effective with time and how to move in rhythm with time. We do a lot of work on learning how to hold grief and hold anger and hold some of the emotions that, you know, people think are unsavory and they stay away from. But as, you know, a depth coach, you actually want to lean into it and really know how to hold it and help your client through it. We go through lots of kind of, you know, extra tools, like ritual is a coaching tool and journaling is a coaching tool. I won't, you know, I'll stop there because there's so much more. Like I said, I can only describe a fraction of it. We have also a couple of special guest teachers that teach on what I think are just such important topics, like how to be sensitive to issues of inclusivity in your coaching practice. It's a very, very, very important topic. We look at the difference between the scope of coaching and the scope of therapy. I have a therapist that I've actually trained as a coach, who's been a therapist for over 25 years. She does such a great job of helping us to know when it's not a coaching situation. Oh, you get all the legal documents you need for your coaching business. You get all of the documents that you need for scheduling, focus reports, assessments, cancellations, you know, any kind of document you need to be working with clients. I do a whole training on how to re-sign clients. There's a whole art to re-signing clients that we look at. So this isn't coaching light. Advanced coaching for practitioners who are really committed to going deep. And I don't just share the information with you in the training. You don't simply learn. You emerge not only having all of the content, but really owning the skills in your mind, in your heart, in your soul, and in your body. And that's because in addition to our training calls, there's always a ton of time for Q&A, for discussions, for reflection, and there are also special group practicums throughout the training to practice skills, to receive feedback, as well as an option if you want for partner coaching, too, so that you can continue, you really practice your skills every week. So you might be wondering who this program is for, and I'll just tell you first who it's not for. You can probably guess. It's not for you if you're looking for coaching light or to just skim the surface. And it's not for you, and this is important, if you're not willing to really look deeply inside yourself at your own behaviors and your own patterns and your own shadows and your own responses and reactions. So here's who the program is for. It's either for experienced practitioners, and about 65 to 70% of the people that step in are experienced, who are already amazing at what they do, but they recognize the absolute vital importance of continuing on the journey of mastery, of getting better and better at what you do. It's for seasoned practitioners who are really ready to create bigger breakthroughs and do an even better job at navigating through client resistance and fear and shadow. The program is also for new coaches, but only a very particular kind of new coach. It's for new coaches who are looking at the industry and feeling like there's a lot of surface and fluffy fluff, and they know that that's not them. They know that they're ready to go deep, and they know that they're ready for an accelerated learning environment. the program is also for practitioners who aren't necessarily coaches, like massage therapists, nutritionists, acupuncturists, yoga teachers, people who recognize the vital importance of being able to combine your modality with a deep knowing of how to walk your clients through fear and resistance and how to hold them accountable and how to help help them create deeper and deeper self-awareness. Now, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, this is awesome, but I also need help with my marketing. I need help with the actual marketing structures. I totally hear you. And that's why, as a bonus to the training, I also include a business building training. So when you register for Sacred Depths, what I gift you is 10 hours of recorded training on how to develop your messaging, how to develop your marketing, how to develop your systems, how to go step by step to outreach to potential prospects, how to build your community. It includes a comprehensive training on how to lead effective sales conversations with authenticity and with integrity. So I have a lot of the business building pieces in there for you because I know that those are important too. Like I said earlier, I'm not anti-marketing. It's just that the quality, you have to bring the quality to support the marketing. The other thing is everything that we learn by way of coaching skills is going to make you better at marketing. The deeper you go with your listening skills, the better your sales calls are going to be, the better your copy is going to be. The more you understand about the different resistance archetypes, then the better you're going to be able to handle resistance in your sales conversations and in your copy and in your presentations, so on and so forth. All right, let me just tell you real quick. There's two levels to the training. Level one includes everything that I just shared with you. It's a 55-hour, fully comprehensive certification training that really gives you everything you need to be a stellar coach and distinguish yourself from the rest of the industry. It includes 90-minute training calls. And they're delivered in the same way that we've done our call today, training as well as Q&A. I'm always open to reflection, feedback, and to coaching you. Each training call also comes with worksheets and resource sheets that really help you go deeper with the skills that you learn in class and also the inner work. We also have practicum calls that are devoted specifically to practicing new skills. I can't emphasize enough, and for those of you that have worked with me before, you know that I am 100% here for you. I will answer all questions. I will stay on the line until you get what you need. So it's a very personalized program where the more you participate, you know, the more you get and the more you get from me. We also have a Facebook group in case you have questions from me in between sessions. It's a place to also connect with other like-minded individuals. And I also drop a lot of goodies and extra content into the Facebook group as well. And then that level one also includes that bonus business building system that I mentioned. Level one is really a full enchilada. Level two includes all of that, and it's for you if you know that you want to go even deeper. So it includes everything in level one, but it also has an additional 3-day in-person training on the topic of coaching through shadow and archetypes and how to become a master at directing the energetic journey. That's really at the core of so much transformation. So level two includes the retreat on shadow and archetype. We go really deep. The inner work is also very deep there. And then it also includes monthly, what I call coaching clinic calls. And it's an opportunity for you to bring any of your client case studies, anything you have going on with clients that you feel stumped with, or you feel like, oh, I want to look at this, I feel like I could be going deeper, doing a better job, or I'm stumped, or, you know, whatever it is. So there's a special rate on Sacred Depths. Let me give you the information. Is if you go to www.joannalindenbaum.com/sacred-depths, there is a really there's a special rate right now that's time limited, and I really try to make the rate as doable as possible while also honoring all that I really give in the program. For today, for those of you that are on this call, there's actually an opportunity for an even kind of bigger, I don't know, deal, you could call it, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, if you know that you want to step in right now. So if you know, if you've been, I know a lot of people on this call have been thinking about Sacred Depths and, you know, have really wanted to step in. And if you know that you want to step in today, then I'm happy to gift you with two additional things on top of the special rate. Number one is an additional business building program, so even more direction on marketing, on preview presentations, on copy, on how to write copy, social media, all of that. You get a lot of it without this extra bonus, but I'll give you the full Your Sacred Business program. And then also, if you sign up today, I'm happy to gift you with two 40-minute sessions with one of my team coaches, one-on-one sessions, so that you get two coaching sessions, but really the purpose is to get some deeper modeling of the Sacred Depths coaching and principles, and you will receive so much from those two sessions. If you want to talk to somebody on my team, you can also schedule a call to speak to one of us. And you can find that on the sales page, which is, again, at joannalindenbaum.com/sacred-depths. Okay, we have just a couple of minutes left. The first thing I'd love for you to do is take a moment and write down for yourself. I know we covered a lot today. What is your biggest takeaway? What is your biggest takeaway from our time together today? And by the way, this is also a coaching principle. So it's always important to start a coaching session, as you know, I shared earlier, with getting really clear on what the client's intention is, right? What would you like to receive? And then it's also really always important for integration purposes, at the end of a call, to ask what they're taking away. And, of course, there's so much more that they're taking away than, you know, what they'll just mention in that quick sentence or two, but it's an opportunity to integrate and to really be seen in the deeper awarenesses and to own them more. So what are you taking for yourself? Get clear on that. I want to remind you of the homework that I gave you around doing the self-questioning. It's something that I think you'll really enjoy. I know we have just a minute or two left. I'm happy to stay on the line as long as possible. If you can hang on, I'd love to hear your takeaways, what you're really taking for yourself, and any questions that you have about what we covered today. So it's 3. If you need to go, please go. But if you can stay and you've got a question and you want to ask or share a takeaway, let me know. This is Anne again. Hi. You there, Anne?
I am. I think that was actually from before.
Oh, from before.
That's okay. And for me, you know, the big takeaway was really, again, simplify, simplify, simplify.
Yeah.
Like, drop the words.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And every now and again, like, it needs to be wordy. But, yeah, that succinct,
yeah,
what can really help penetrate more easily and more deeply. Good. Who else? Does anybody have any questions or anything else they want to share before we wrap today? All right, then I will trust that we are complete for today. Thank you, everyone, for all that you brought today, and whether you raised your hand or not, whether we heard from you or not, thank you for your presence, and I hope that it's been really helpful. It's been a real honor to share all of this with you, and I hope to connect with you soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.